This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of July 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of July 2014, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Ellen Gray.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are putting deposit on new bank for county, revised Silver Hill plan set for launch, and fall in affordable homes. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please? Ellen.
Putting deposit on new bank for county, support for community bank by Andrew Napier. A new German-style bank for Hampshire is winning support from civic chiefs. Winchester City Council has expressed interest in the bank, which would be based in Winchester, and aims to support local people and business. The Hampshire Community Bank would be a not-for-profit operation, providing a full range of services to individuals, businesses and social enterprises living, working or operating in the county. Similar banks have operated in Germany for many years. The Cabinet has welcomed the idea. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance, said, "This support is very much in line with our own priorities for ensuring a thriving local economy in Winchester. It's the right course of action to take, and we're expressing interest in setting money aside." The council is considering financial support of £250,000 to become a founding member of the bank, along with other local authorities. The bank needs £14 million to start up, the Cabinet heard last week. Councillor Rob Humby, council leader, said Cabinet is backing this initiative subject to full council approval because the Hampshire Community Bank can be a major new element of our support to the Winchester economy, helping local people and businesses. Experts believe there is a demand in the market for a bank that serves the needs of the local community and works with businesses, councils and charities to deliver sustainable economic growth and fulfil social objectives. Similar not-for-profit operations have worked successfully in Germany for 200 years and account for three-quarters of all retail bank deposits and lending to small and medium-sized enterprises there. The bank has support from the Winchester branch of the Chamber of Commerce. Steve Gates, its chairman, said, "It's something the Chamber is very supportive of, improving access for local businesses to finance, to grow and expand. We have a very high concentration of micro-businesses in Winchester, and a local source of funding will be a supportive of them. There's a growing sense of optimism within the local business community. Businesses have been waiting a couple of years to make investment and will be looking for funding, and this type of community bank will help." Created by Local First, a community interest group, the bank will be locally owned and run for the benefit of local people. Eastleigh Borough Council has already said it would invest in the business, and depending on the level of customer deposits, the bank hopes to lend at least £100 million in its first year. The group intends to raise £7 million and hopes the government will match it to create a total of £14 million. Deposits up to £85,000 will be protected under the Government Protection Scheme. The bank itself must undergo regulatory approval, and Local First hopes it will be up and running in 2 years' time.
And the second front page headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, revised Silver Hill plan set for launch, also by Andrew Napier. Winchester civic chiefs were last Thursday poised to allow the developer of Silver Hill to submit a revised planning application. Critics of the £150 million redevelopment warn that it would be a vital and irrevocable step which will see the City Council surrender control of the scheme. Henderson wants to put aside the approved plans from 2009 and reduce the number of homes from 307 to 184, drop 100 affordable homes, scrapped the bus station, cut public car parking from 330 to 279, and increased retail space by 55%. A public exhibition of the new plans will be held in the Guildhall courtyard from 12 noon on Thursday until Friday, July the 18th. Councillor Kim Gottlieb at the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday made a strong attack on the council, saying the public was being misled. He's fighting a last-ditch campaign, pressing for a delay to the plans for further consideration, arguing it is too overbearing and will ruin the city centre. In a highly unusual move, Councillor Gottlieb, a Conservative, wrote a report calling for an independent investigation into the handling of the scheme. His report was only received on Monday morning, but Committee Chairman Chris Pines allowed it to be discussed. The hard-hitting report said the council lacked the requisite experience and competence in the management of the project. Members both inside and outside of the cabinet are not being properly advised, and the fact that the public too is being misled is a major flaw in the process. But others criticised his stance. Councillor Theresa Evans, Liberal Democrat, said, "I understand his passion and everyone is entitled to an opinion, but some of his language is unnecessary." Chief Executive Simon Eden told the Chronicle, "I agree with Councillor Evans' comment that it's a shame that if some individuals feel they have to resort to such accusations without backing them up." Councillor Malcolm Wright, Conservative, said he was concerned about car parking as the new plans had fewer public parking spaces. Another controversial change will be the likelihood that the street markets will stay in the High Street and Middle Brook Street instead of relocating to the Broadway. Deputy Council Leader Victoria Weston said the scheme needed to be updated and improved. "I'm reassured that we're advised this represents a good deal for the council and the city," she said. Kevin Warren, Head of Estates, said a new scheme now would take 4 to 5 years to bring to fruition. The City of Winchester Trust Preservation Watchdogs supports the scheme. Michael Carden, Vice Chairman, said, "I consider the height acceptable in this off-High Street area and believe it will be absorbed into and become an asset to the character and status of Winchester."
And the third front page headline story, please, Jane.
And here we have fall in new affordable homes. Affordable house building in Hampshire has fallen by more than 50% over the last 12 months. According to a new report, the number of affordable homes being built the year the coalition came to power was 1,940, compared to 840 last year, a fall of 57%. The figures were released by Raglan Housing's chief executive Nicholas Harris to mark Rural Housing Week. The Department for Communities and Local Government has claimed its record on affordable housing since 2010 was a clear success story. Yet the number of homes completed in Winchester, for example, fell from 130 during 2010 to 2011 to 90 in 2013 to 14. A spokesman for Winchester City Council said, "The council recognises the problem of housing affordability in the district and has maintained robust policies to secure the greatest possible percentage of affordable homes from every development. Barton Farm, for example, will provide 800 affordable homes over the next few years. Other major development on Greenfield sites, such as Pitt Manor and west of Waterlooville, will also deliver large numbers." The spokesman added, "It is getting harder to secure affordable housing on previously developed sites. That is for economic reasons over which the council has no control. The council will continue to look at ways of meeting housing needs through its own new build programme and through partnership working."
And that concludes the front page headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person and Chronicle comment. I'll start with the death notices. Ayling, Barbara Olive, known as Barbara Ayling, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 83. Barter, Frederick James Barter, peacefully at home, aged 86. Evans, Frederick Leonard Evans, peacefully aged 86. Gates, Leslie James Bernard Gates, peacefully aged 94. Gibson, John Walsh Gibson, peacefully after a short illness aged 81. Green, Brenda Green, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 84. Gregory, Peter Gregory, at Winchester Hospital, aged 87. Hans, Margaret Mag Ne Pierce Hans, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 89. Hockley, Donald Charles of Hockley of Littleport, suddenly at his home, aged 91. Kilpin, Raymond Ray Kilpin, peacefully at home, aged 97. And finally, Travers, Sandra Sandy Travers, peacefully after a short illness, and has no age given. Now, Ellen has got a Christian comment.
It's written this week by Terry E. Hemming. The delight of sharing the enthusiasm of the young. Last week, I had fun, for I was back with former students sharing in their enthusiasm. The first was with a young woman being ordained as priest here in Winchester, and the second was with another young woman acting in the play which she had written about the experience of being a privileged young woman in the 21st century. It was a delight to see their enthusiasm, achievements, and apprehension of the future. In the same week we heard of young British Muslims fighting in Syria and Iraq. They too had enthusiasm and idealism. Yet rather than being thrilled, I shared the common reaction of dismay at their hatred of their home country. Now the young are prone to overstatement, and I would not wish to be held to account for things I said when young. I have changed as I've grown older. This happens in societies also. Things once acceptable are no longer so, and other things which were a cause for scandal now pass as perfectly normal. And this leads to the question which politicians have been broaching as to how we give young people positive values. I'm not convinced that there are special British values. My friends from other countries share a belief in democracy, value tolerance, and some even have a sense of humour. It would be somewhat proud to say these values belonged exclusively to this country. I'm happy to own Christian values, although I recognise that the definition of those might vary, with a spectrum ranging from the Quakers to the fundamentalist evangelicals of America. On many ethical issues, again, it would be somewhat proud not to see that they are shared by people of other religions, especially the Abrahamic ones, and indeed by those of no religion. So what do I wish for young people to learn? As a Christian, I would say love. Love not in a romantic sense, but in an understanding of other people and wishing for their best. One half of Jesus' answer as to what a meaningful life involves was, "You shall love your neighbour as yourself." And this was taken up by the early church as a summary of the law. Yet they were relying on the Hebrew scriptures, where in the Torah or Leviticus this was stated years earlier. And this requires an empathy, and this is what I wish for people to have, so that they can feel the pain of others and not just their own. The root for my values comes from a belief in God who is love, and therefore love must be the motive of all who follow him and the base for their values.
We'll continue with the letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836 or emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 9 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the first one is from Professor Robert Adam, and he says, "Save us from this corporate vandalism. Sir, Councillor Weston asks concerned members of the public to have an informed view of the Silver Hill proposals, Chronicle Letters, July the 3rd. I can assure her that many of us, with at least as much expertise as the council advisers, do. Furthermore, none of us have our judgment clouded by an historic joint venture with a developer. No amount of varied materials and public art will take away two absolutely fundamental problems. How can a development, much of which is seven stories high, more than twice the height of most of the city, fit in? And how can a design prepared by a single firm with its own house style that occupies more than three city blocks, when the largest single firm design in the city is one block, maintain the character of Winchester? The city's own 2003 planning brief was sensible enough to recommend that neither of these would be acceptable, so why are they now? This is the last chance to save the city from corporate vandalism. Councillor Weston and other members of the council should ask themselves one question. Will I be proud to tell my children and grandchildren that I let this happen? Can our elected politicians please examine their consciences and look beyond the architect's hype and bureaucratic misinformation and save our city? Professor Robert Adam, Crawley.
And another letter, this time from Martin Smart. Sir, I write to express my very deep concern that the council appears to have taken for granted that the residents, business people and the general public will just have to accept its decision to go ahead with the monstrosity that will become the Silver Hill development. Perhaps it might be worth considering holding a local referendum to see what the true opinion of its own constituents really think. The current scheme will do nothing to enhance the success of Winchester as a city. It will only serve to reduce it to the lowest common denominator, a simple and easy solution for the council, and one which in 10 years' time, when there is an uproar over the disaster that it has become, it will all have moved on and the council can claim it was nothing really to do with them. Surely there is someone in the council with the courage to stand up and say this scheme is wrong, and to say let's hold on and re-look at this. Is the scheme really in the best interests of our city? The council should remember it is also our city, and we all deserve to have a say in what happens to it. The council should be looking to redevelop the area by upgrading the historical elements of the city to create a truly unique visitor destination, not just another copy of the impersonal, faceless, drab and soulless shopping malls and shopping centres that Southampton and Basingstoke have become. Winchester has an opportunity to become a city centre that is as unique today as it was when the most important city in England. And that was from Martin Smart, Fig Place of Lymington.
Peter Chadwick writes, Sir, nobody can argue with the need to redevelop the Silver Hill area, and I applaud our councillor's decision to invest in development here. I also understand that the City of Winchester operates in a competitive market, where the big retailers willing to pay highest rates demand ever larger stores in order to sustain their own growth. But I am deeply concerned that in trying to compete for these retailers, we will dilute and undermine the city's unique qualities and strengths that make it the desirable place to live and visit that we want it to be. The council's website sounds very reassuring in its introduction to the proposal. The public realm in Silver Hill will be similar to existing Winchester spaces. We don't have large squares or wide streets, so Silver Hill will reflect that character. In actual fact, the designs are not remotely similar to any existing spaces in Winchester, other than perhaps the hospital. The facades are featureless, have no character, and look very dated already. I'm also concerned about the huge retail spaces within the plan. It would be a terrible shame if we just used this as an opportunity to cram in more big retailers. I believe the Silver Hill development gives us an opportunity to create a different kind of retail experience, something that people are willing to travel for and that sets Winchester apart. So, what can we do to make Winchester different? Pete Chadwick, Sparsholt.
And surprise, surprise, Tim Fairl is writing also on the same subject. Sir, may I add my voice to the increasing number calling upon Winchester City Council to step back from the brink and reconsider before it makes an irrevocable commitment to the development of the Silver Hill area as it is at present planned. I entirely agree that the area needs to be redeveloped, But the current plans will not meet Winchester's present or future needs, and even if they did, they would still be inappropriate in many ways, including those highlighted in Councillor Kim Gottlieb's How to Ruin a City. There is also a constitutional issue. As in many other planning matters, great and small, this one has been led by officials rather than elected members of the council. Councillors who feel that these plans have been forced on them are justified in doing so. Councillors of all parties must reassert their rights and duties as elective representatives of the Winchester District public and ensure that officials of the council conduct themselves as its servants, not its masters, in this matter and in others. As to the plans themselves, they are no more appropriate to a city of great historical importance than were those of the 1960s that they are intended to replace. They represent an attempt to give Winchester a centre that will not only be out of scale and out of sympathy with its surroundings, but that will also, in what it offers to the public, do no more than replicate the centres of Southampton, Basingstoke, Eastleigh and other such nearby towns. Winchester should not imitate others. It should differentiate itself. Instead of filling its centre with nation chain stores, of which it has quite enough already, it should attract independent retailers, not least by establishing a covered market. If similar imagination were to be applied to the commercial, housing, cultural, recreational and other aspects of the development and to its overall design, Winchester could have a new centre that we could all be proud of, that would serve the district's population far better than what is currently planned, and that would reinforce rather than detract from Winchester's unique character, thus attracting visitors from far and wide. Tim Fell, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And again, Sir, I would like to add my name and voice to that of the swelling ranks of people who have real concerns about the proposed redevelopment of the Silver Hill area of Winchester. There is no question that this area deserves redevelopment. It is, though, vital to the character and future prosperity of the city that the development is both appropriate and sympathetic. It is clear from everything that has been revealed about the proposed development, and, more tellingly, by what has not, that the scheme is neither. The documents that have been released and the recent exhibition have done their best to mask the immense bulk of what is now proposed that would have become obvious had the developer chosen to display a full model of the development or properly made computer-generated imagery instead of models of selected bits and a few highly flattering architectural glosses. What is revealed is a scheme that has self-evidently been reshaped to maximise the developer's profit without regard to the many damaging impacts it will have on the city. I ask that a halt is called, or at the very least a temporary postponement, while careful consideration is given to the appropriateness or otherwise of what is now proposed. My belief is that the current scheme should be reviewed in the light of the original brief. The original brief should be reviewed in the light of recent developments in retailing and current transport and housing demands within Winchester, and ideally fresh architectural and planning talent should be brought to bear. Winchester deserves far better than what is proposed, which is remarkable only for its immense scale and heart-rending ordinariness. And that was from Alan Kenchington, Homer Cottage, East Stratton.
Keep open spaces and play areas. It's another letter about our planners. Sir, previous Chronicle articles on Winchester City Council proposals to lose the playing field in Westmond Road week, the loss of open space elsewhere in Winchester, and threats to the wreck highlight the hypocrisy of removing amenities for existing residents while councillors ask for more amenities at the Barton Farm development. Yet again, the City Council is trying to gain planning permission to build on the Westman Road playing field. There are over 20 sites, including green open spaces and at least one playing field in Winchester, marked for housing in the Council's Winchester District Strategic Housing Land Availability Assessment, the WDSHLA. And this means losing amenities serving local communities. In WEEK, the local community want open space and play areas third, with Barton Farm to meet local housing needs first. in the St Barnabas and Harestock Community Action Plan on the WCC website. With Barton Farm, the area will already receive 800 affordable homes and 1,200 homes. To build on the Westman Road playing field will make the already inadequate open space and play areas in Wick worse. What Wick needs is for Winchester City Council to keep and improve the existing amenities, not to lose them. Check the WDSHLA. This will affect everyone. So please join the fight against the lasting loss people will suffer and voice your opposition against the Westman Road playing field development, quoting planning reference 14/01353/FUL to the WCC, to the WCC planning department, and similar losses to your councillors and Winchester City Council. Name and address supplied of the person who wrote that, so I can't tell you who it was.
And this is from Christine Holloway, who is director of the Winchester Action on Climate Change, or WINAC. And she says, if we care about our future, we must act. Sir, last month was the hottest May globally since records began in 1880. Last year, 2012, 2010, 1998, were the next hottest ever. Will our grandchildren say we fiddled while Hampshire burnt? 3 weeks ago, I was hopeful that Winchester City Council agreed a plan to increase investment in renewable energy and energy-saving measures. MP Steve Brine had chaired a packed meeting launching WINAC's big debate on how we can do our fair share to tackle the causes of climate change here in Winchester District. Now I'm worried. I love our countryside and I love wildlife. That's why I want to see more renewable energy generated locally. If we care about our future, we must act. We need to cut harmful greenhouse gases. We need to use renewable energy instead of fossil fuels. Less than 1 in 50 units of the energy we used in Winchester District in 2013, not counting transport, came from local renewable sources. To do our fair share towards national and global targets to tackle worldwide global warming, a quarter of our energy needs to be renewable by 2025. We can do this, and we can do it locally. We just need to decide how we do it. That's why WINAC wants you to join the big debate. Look at the proposals from WINAC at winac.org.uk/ourshare, winac.org.uk/ourshare, and tell us what you think. For example, if you don't think wind farms are part of the answer, what do you want to see instead? Email ourshare@winac.org.uk or even tweet at WINAC #ourshare. I'll say those again. ourshare@winac.org.uk or tweet at WINAC #ourshare. Remember, doing nothing is not an option. We can't rely on other parts of the country or other nations. Our world, our share. Christine Holloway.
And Jonathan Arnold continues the debate. Not fooled by the wind farm lobby. Sir, thank God most of our councillors were not fooled by the claims made in support of EDF's wind farm when they rejected the application. The supporters say it would supply 13,000 homes. Late in the day, they bumped the figure up to 15,000 homes because, frankly, who would know? Maybe those 15,000 households wouldn't mind having no electricity for 5 days a week when the wind doesn't blow. For last month, they would have had almost no electricity at all. J.J. Heath-Caldwell, Chronicle Letters, June the 26th, said it was possibly the most popular application ever made in the UK, claiming 2,845 letters of support. Again, most of us are not fooled by this. The planning officers added it up to around 1,800, although EDF magically converted that into 4,000 in their presentation to the councillors. Almost all of these were identical pro forma letters generated by the lobbyists with financial help from the industry. This sort of game has been played all over the country. In just 2 days, a petition against the two wind farms collected 3,080 signatures, and nobody had to be paid at all. Are J.J. Heath Caldwell and friends trying to suggest that we would hardly notice 14 industrial structures, the height of Salisbury Cathedral, standing on a hill with flashing red lights at night and rotating madly on the occasional days when the wind blows? The most interesting thing to emerge from the debate was what happens at Chilbolton Observatory. What an amazing, internationally important research facility we have here on our doorstep. It turns out that two wind farms on the horizon would seriously restrict their work on, yes, weather and climate change. And that was from Jonathan Arnold, Norton, Hampshire.
Michael Hammett writes, "Bollard needed at Danger Junction, sir. For a second time, I have been struck by a motor vehicle rounding the corner of Sparkford Road and Ranelagh Road, opposite the junction of Sleepers Hill. The momentum of vehicles descending from the university direction seems to lead them to the corner, which is quite sharp, too quickly, with the result that they are taken by surprise by vehicles coming the other way, despite its probability. They then choose between collision with the oncoming vehicle or with a pedestrian at the apex of the curve, to the disadvantage of the latter. May I respectfully suggest that a large, stern, well-rooted bollard be erected at that apex, with perhaps a prefatory warning, 'Angry bollard ahead.'" Michael Hamlet, Edgar Road, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor for this week. Thank you to everybody concerned. And now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, "Does the latest tightening of security at airports put you off flying?" Noel has the answers.
Yes, I've got four answers. Damien Hunt, 45, owner of Court Fish and Chip Shop in St George's Street, said, "No, I don't think so. It doesn't bother me at all. I'm quite pleased with the amount of security there. If it stops someone blowing up a plane, then it's worked." Rivka Hatchwell, 18, student from Mount Pleasant, Kingsworthy, said, "Yes, it does. It makes everyone feel like a criminal, and it victimises people. It could be seen as an act of discrimination based on race or religion, and it could go even further." While Julian Ellis Brown, 18, student from Abbotsworthy, said, "I believe it's a good thing for them to be doing, but I don't believe there are sufficient resources to properly instigate the correct policies and procedures." And Robert Baird, 70, retired of London Road, Mitcheldever, said, "No, I don't think it would. I was in the military before and there's never enough security. If those chaps want to do something, they'll find a way to do so."
Now we're going back through the mists of time for our historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was July the 11th, 1989, when a council blamed for trout deaths. Winchester City Council is being blamed by the furious owner of a trout hatchery for the deaths of a quarter of a million fish. The three-inch fishes died after lightning knocked out electricity supplies at St Peter's Farm in Church Lane, Hambledon. Said owner, Tim Piercy, 37, "I'm having a battle with the council, and they took out enforcement action against me, which stops my wife and I living at the farm. We are forced to run things from home way over in Denmead. The trout need constant fresh water, and 20,000 gallons an hour is pumped through their lake. Without it, they just died."
Let's go back 50 years ago with Ellen.
July the 11th, 1964. Opposition to development. "Firm in their opposition to any development on the site of Stockbridge Camp, Hampshire County Council Planning Committee at Winchester on Friday last week resolved to ask the Minister of Housing and Local Government to hold a public local inquiry on this controversial matter. They would like to give organisations and members of the public an opportunity to state their views before the Minister gives his decision on the future of the campsite. In November last year, the committee informed the War Department that they were strongly of the opinion that the site should not be used for any other purpose than agriculture or forestry."
Now it's going back 100 years ago.
July the 11th, 1914, a fete held at Sutton Scotney. The annual fete promoted by Court Test Valley of the Ancient Order of Foresters was held at Sutton Scotney on Monday, associated with the event being the customary public luncheon at which over 90 sat down. On Sunday, the usual open-air service was held in a meadow kindly lent by Mr. Diddums. The Sutton Scotney Band, under the conductorship of Mr. Smith, paraded and met the representatives of the friendly societies at Hunton. At the same time, Primitive Methodist Band from Micheldever met the territorials from Andover at Bullington.
Finally, Jane's going back 200 years.
200 years ago was July the 11th, 1814, Asylum for Insane Persons. Asylum, for the reception of a limited number of insane persons at Berry House near Gosport. Patients of respectability are received at this asylum, afflicted with mental derangement, under the immediate and constant care of Mr. C. Finch, second son of the late Mr. Finch of Laverstock near Salisbury. Mr. Finch presumes that from his very great experience, the number of cures effected by him and annually discharged from his asylum, with the mild and regular mode of treatment, would be a sufficient recommendation for the important trust he solicits. The most humane and experienced attendants are carefully selected, and who are sent out to take care of insane persons in cases which do not require a removal.
Back to the present, and Ellen is going to read an alternative look at the news. Yes, it's Belgarum Diary.
Maritime skills put to the test. A Winchester teenager has been putting his sea legs to the test and now has been awarded a maritime qualification. And there's a picture of a smiling Stephen Robbins in his uniform holding an example of his rope work. Stephen Robbins, aged 16, joined the Sea Cadets Winchester unit when he was 13 and has since been tested on his knowledge of rope work, rigging, splicing and whipping, canvas work and decorative rope work. He has now been awarded the Advanced Seamanship qualification, which last year only 13 cadets out of 14,000 completed. The leading cadet said, "During my time at Sea Cadets, I have really enjoyed meeting new people and learning new skills." He added, "I've gained many qualifications as a Sea Cadet, and I would recommend it for anyone wanting to experience fun and adventure." His achievement is part of a new national partnership with Carnival and Sea Cadets, which offers people aged between 10 and 18 the opportunity to expand their maritime skills. Just like swimming in the sky, a Winchester woman recovering from anorexia has completed a skydive which raised over £400 for charity in the process. Lydia Crump, aged 21, of Broadchalk Down Badger Farm, spent much of last year in hospital after her weight plummeted to just 5.5 stone. But now she is celebrating after completing a tandem skydive which raised £420 for Action Aid. She said, "It was weirdly calm. It all seemed a bit surreal until we jumped. And then by the time you see everyone else jumping, you don't really have time to think. It's such a thrill. Then goes weirdly serene. It just feels like you're swimming in the sky." Council fails to spell it out correctly, and there's a photograph of a parking ticket. "It is on every road sign, map and sheet of paper lurking about the office. No, it's not graffiti, it's Winchester. Considering how many times a day the average Wintonian types their home city's name, it always comes as a surprise to see it spelt incorrectly, especially on a council parking ticket. On a quick trip to the shops using the South Winchester Park and Ride, the ticket was printed South Winchester. Winchester with a T in the middle." Ferrari comes to the rescue. Niall Holden saved Chris Evans's bacon when the breakfast disc jockey urgently needed to get his hands on a car for his recent Famous Five Children in Need event. The broadcaster auctioned off the chance to drive some of the country's most exclusive classic cars at last November's Monster National fundraiser, in a bid to boost the total raised for deprived youngsters by £1 million. When one vehicle suddenly dropped out at short notice, Chris texted fellow car nut Niall to ask if he could use his 1967 Ferrari 275 GTB stroke 4, once owned by guitarist Eric Clapton. "I was really happy to help out," said Niall, who owns cable firm VDC Trading. What could be more important than raising money for a children's charity? I did ask him not to scratch it, though. Self-confessed petrol head Niall, aged 53, lives near Winchester and started VDC Trading 26 years ago. The firm's flagship Van Damme brand of high-quality audiovisual and music cabling is used at the Glastonbury Festival, Abbey Road Music Studios, and was installed for the London Olympics and the Queen's Jubilee celebrations. And finally, Balgaram writes about a romantic venue great for seeing stars in your eyes. The planets could soon align for Winchester residents as the city's Science Centre and Planetarium hosts a singles evening. Guests can enjoy canapés, a welcome drink, a planetarium show and games designed for mingling. It comes as part of the special adult evenings that the Science Centre already hosts. Lucy Gray, the marketing officer, said, "It's obviously quite a unique setting and we've got lots of space for people and there are lots of different exhibits to look at whilst there are no children running around. The planetarium is quite romantic and the sky is something that couples can look up at night." She added, "We want to promote the place as somewhere that adults can come and use for special events. It starts at 7 o'clock in the evening on Thursday, July the 24th, and to book, call 01962 863 791 or online at winchestersciencecentre.org.
First person this week is by Ronald Allison, and it's read by Noel.
He writes, "It's a world on two wheels." First, a definition. A machine for riding consisting of a saddle seat surmounting two wheels to which the rider communicates motion by means of pedals. So says the shorter Oxford English Dictionary. Perhaps the longer version would have added more detail, but other research suggests that the machine we call simply the bike was invented in France in the middle of the 1800s. The names of Pierre and Ernest Michaud are much mentioned, though challenged, but it does seem that the idea of propelling the thing by means of pedals and rotary cranks was that of Michaud. Previously, the rider sat on the saddle and used his feet directly on the ground. What perhaps needs to be made clear is that the idea, for once, did not come from Leonardo da Vinci. Or did it? Whoever was responsible certainly made a difference, and a worldwide one at that. Ubiquitous is the only appropriate word, or perhaps everywhere. Millions of us own and or use a bike. Their introduction and the development of mass production led to the sort of revolution we have only come near matching in recent times with the mobile phone. Lives with a bike have been transformed, and learning to ride has been and remains a hugely significant rite of passage. I can remember as if it was yesterday, and it is well over 70 years since then, the evening in our back garden in Weymouth when I came face to face with my father. I was learning to ride. Dad had been first pushing, then just holding me as I went round and round the lawn, until suddenly I found myself going straight towards him, unsupported, on my own. Dad had let go. I could ride, and from then on I did. Now all this history and nostalgia has been brought on by what has been happening these recent days. We collectively in this country seem to have rediscovered the bicycle and are being encouraged to do so. Some, of course, have always cycled. It has been how they have got about it, and it has been a hobby, if not a passion. But now, as Brits win Olympic medals on bikes, ride away with two successive wins in the Tour de France, and Le Tour comes to England. Okay, to Yorkshire, and the bike is honoured. And so are those who ride them, unless, of course, they are adults riding on pavements. I'm sure that in London the mayor has got at least one thing right with his Boris bikes. Every encouragement to get us to ride should be welcomed, but with safety always uppermost. Making it safe to cycle has to be the priority in the mind of every town planner and developer.
Now it's editorial comment read by Jane.
And the editorial comment this week is, "A bank for the people, not for profit." It seems it's not only when it comes to playing football that the English can learn a lesson or two from the Germans. a new German-style bank for Hampshire, came a step closer after winning support from the civic chiefs in Winchester. City councillors are backing the introduction of the Hampshire Community Bank, which would be based in Winchester, by considering appropriately to deposit some cash into helping it set up. They are considering financial support of £250,000 to become a founding member of the bank, along with other local authorities. The bank would be a not-for-profit operation, providing a full range of services to individuals, businesses and social enterprises living, working or operating in Hampshire. The bank needs £14 million to start up, and the council believes it could be a major new way of supporting the Winchester economy. Business chiefs are also in favour, saying such a bank would improve access for local businesses to grow. After the global financial meltdown, the bank might just be the way to restore the public's confidence in banking institutions. After all, if it works for the Germans...
Now, we've got one announcement this week, and that's from Open Sight, who say, "We are pleased to inform you that the Open Sight Mobile Advice Service, MAS, bus will be in Alton Market, High Street, Alton, Tuesday the 22nd of July, between the hours of 10:30 and 12:30. And now, what's on? I'm looking at the nearest one, and that's at the Plaza Theatre, Romsey. And it's called The Accrington Pals by Peter Whalen. And it's from the 15th to the 19th of July 2014. And it's all about the First World War and the groups of people who went from estates and places like that. So they were all together, like bands of brothers. And if you're interested, the box office number is 01794 512987, or you can go to their website, www.plazatheatre.com. On Saturday the 19th of July, from 1pm to 4pm, in Micheldeva Village, there is the Summer Fete. Come and join us for a fabulous afternoon of traditional games, stalls, food and entertainment. And looking further in the future, looking first of all at September, I have the Theatre Royal list of plays that are on. And from the 11th to the 14th of September, there is Not About Heroes, the story of the great war poets Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon. That's every day at 7:30, and there will be a matinee on Friday the 12th of September at 1:30pm. Looking at Wednesday the 17th of September at 7:30pm, there is a thing called Stones in His Pockets, and it's a multi-award-winning comedy by Marie Jones. That's Wednesday the 17th of September at 7:30pm. And now looking forward to October, She Stoops to Conquer by Oliver Goldsmith, presented by Northern Broadsides. That's from Tuesday the 14th to Saturday the 18th of October. And for all of those details and the prices, you can contact the box office 01962 840 440 or go to the Theatre Royal website. That's www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. Lighting up times are, I'm afraid, not available this week. But if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Ellen.
And this is about the Winchester Hat Fair. It's entitled Hats Off to a Milestone. The clown was most certainly in town as schoolchildren danced and sang their way through Winchester's streets at the opening of the 40th annual Hat Fair. Each year the festival sees 40,000 people flock to Winchester, bringing with it the glitterati of theatre, comedy, dance, music, artistic installations and stalls scattered about the city. After a short launch at restaurant number 5, Bridge Street, school children joined the school parade. It really does say launch, so I'm assuming it was a launch and not a lunch. So after a short launch at restaurant number 5, Bridge Street, school children joined the school parade, starting off at Abbey Gardens last Friday. Holding brightly coloured South American-themed decorations and banners high above their heads, including piñatas, chilies and sombreros, they danced, sang and whistled through the high street towards the cathedral's outer close. Everywhere were smiling faces as people peered from cafes and shops to watch the 400-strong procession, complete with stilt walkers, pass. Angelic voices filled the air with the official Hat Fair song, There's a Clown in the Town, to officially launch the 3 days of celebrations. Only 3 performances were cancelled due to bad weather on Friday, and festival director Kate Hazel said the UK's longest-running street arts festival was an event the city should be proud of. There's 3 pictures. There's one of a lot of people of all ages sitting in the sunshine in the Abbey grounds and being entertained while they're there. There's one of 2 rather baffled-looking women. There's a display of dresses. They're white. They seem to have bodices from the sort of Jane Austen era. And the skirts are made of lots and lots of sheets of paper. They look like pages from a book. And there's also another photograph of Winchester Uke Jam, and there's about 7 or 8 people singing and playing ukuleles in the sunshine. Mark Cortis, who's the director of Winchester's Theatre Royal, said he took over the running of the Hat Fair in February last year. This year had lots of wonderful, quirky and exciting things for them to look at and enjoy. It felt as if it was made for Winchester, and I'm really pleased with it. Kate Hazel, the UK's director, was pleased that they were here celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Hat Fair. It really is a milestone, she said, and it's really built momentum. And Mark also added that they'd had a great weekend, a fab 40th birthday. They really appreciate the fact that Winchester works so hard and is so helpful to us. We couldn't do it without everybody welcoming us and the artists into the city.
Community scheme in full bloom, thanks to STOR. 2 Hampshire charities are each £5,000 better off, following the success of a community support scheme run by the Southern Cooperative in Bishop's Waltham. The town's 2 high street stores launched the campaign last year to donate up to £5,000 each to Bishop's Waltham in Bloom and Swanmore Preschool. The store's retail business manager, Marcus Preen, presented £10,000 last Thursday, saying, "Whilst not costing our customers a penny to support, the success of this scheme relies on the backing of our customers, which we really appreciate. The scheme's recipient charities are also decided by members of the Southern Cooperative who shop and work at our 2 stores here, so this ensures that the funding directly benefits the local community." Debbie White, manager of Swanmore Preschool, said, "It is fantastic to receive £5,000 and it will enable us to create a really nice all-weather quiet area outside for the children to enjoy year-round." Bishop's Waltham in Bloom undertakes many activities throughout the year with the aim of improving the appearance of the town. Chairman Martin Livermore said, "We are run entirely by volunteers, with funds coming in as sponsorship for the flower beds, baskets and tubs. Personal donations and fundraising events, together with a generous grant from the parish council, are our only sources of funds, and so the generosity of the Southern Cooperative and its customers this year are hugely appreciated."
And here we have how regular checks can save young lives. Hundreds of Winchester schoolchildren heard how young lives could be saved simply by regular self-checks. Charity campaigner Chris Helenga gave three presentations for more than 600 pupils at Henry Beaufort, King's and Westgate Secondary Schools last Thursday. Chris was diagnosed with terminal cancer 5 years ago, aged just 23, and has since campaigned to raise awareness of the issue amongst the young. Her Copperfield charity encourages girls and boys to examine themselves, looking for the telltale lumps that can be cancerous. Copperfield launched the Rethink Cancer campaign, which calls for school pupils to be educated about the signs and risks of the disease. Also at the presentations was City MP Steve Brine, who is chairman of the parliamentary all-party breast cancer group. He arranged for the Copperfield group to have lunch with Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor at the university. Mr. Brine said, "This is a subject I feel so passionately about, and as soon as I met Chris, I wanted to help her and the charity she leads. This day was more than any of us could have hoped for, especially the response from Joy Carter at the university. I hope the young people we met found it interesting and useful, and if just one person or a member of their family is helped by what we are doing, it will be worth it." Chris said, "We've just finished our Winchester Day, having taken in all three schools. Today has been amazing and everyone has been so supportive." And there are photos of Chris Helenga with many pupils, boys and girls, from Winchester schools, and also taking part in interactive exercising during the day.
Sisters celebrate Landmark together. A trio each mark their golden wedding anniversaries. And there's a picture at the top of smiling sisters June Hopes, Gwen Ivory and Anne Driscoll celebrating their golden wedding anniversaries with two of their husbands, Terry Hopes and Robin Ivory, at the Otter Pub. Sadly, Mr. Driscoll was unwell and so couldn't attend. We hope he's better soon. Three sisters from Winchester have celebrated their golden weddings, all within 4 years of one another. June Hopes, Anne Driscoll and Gwen Ivory, all born in Winchester, waited until they reached the 50-year mark to have a proper knees-up, and they held it at the Otter Pub in Otterbourne last Wednesday. Mrs. Hopes, aged 76, who was the only one of the three to be born at the Blackman family home at Barwend Road, celebrated with her sisters Anne, aged 72, and the youngest Gwen, aged 71, who were born at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Mrs. Hopes, who now lives with her husband Terence, aged 76, in Paulet Place, Stanmore, was the eldest to marry at the age of 25 on September the 28th, 1963, at what was St. Martin's Church in Winnell. And there is a black and white photograph of her wedding with all three sisters in it and both sets of parents all smiling. It's a very 1960s wedding. A former barmaid at the Royal Winchester Golf Club, Mrs. Hopes met Terry when he was living in Sutton Scotney. He worked for many years as the caretaker at Winchester Cathedral. Mrs. Ivory, who lives at Littleton Mobile Home Park with her husband Robin, was just 2 days shy of her 21st birthday when they married on June the 6th, 1964, at St. John's Church in Winchester. The couple have two daughters, Leslie and Carol. They also have two grandchildren and met at the now-closed open-air swimming baths on Bull Drove when they were teenagers. She said the secret to her marriage was the support she and her husband gave each other. "We were friends for some time, but we suddenly got together. I suppose we got older and became more serious," she said. "I don't think anyone else would put up with me. We're just here for one another, really. I've been through a few illnesses and he's always supported me. Obviously you have your ups and downs, but you work things out eventually." Mrs. Driscoll was the youngest to marry, tying the knot aged 18 with her husband Bill on October the 15th, 1960, at Winchester's registry office. And the couple, who have three sons, now live at Radstock Road in Southampton.
Yes, I'm sorry. It seems planning problems are unavoidable. This one's headed Anger over site for 70 new homes. Objections to least favoured plot chosen. Parish councillors in Coldon Common have attacked plans for 70 new homes, arguing it goes against its long-term housing strategy. Village residents gathered on Monday to object to the development on land off Highbridge Road, with some stating the development would be harmful to the village's strategy. Councillor Pam Glasspool said, "This seems to go against the views of the local community and it goes against local and national policies." Councillor Val Evans said, "In 2012 we discovered we had to have 250 houses built in the village, and Winchester asked landowners to identify any proposals they might like to put forward. Last year they asked us to set up a small consultation process, and as part of that we engaged with residents and a lot of people participated in that process. The first part was to take issues presented by Winchester City Council, which eliminated a number of places. We had to come up with some sort of strategy. There were three sites, Sandyfields, Clayfields and land adjacent to the mobile home park, which were chosen. This site was the one least favoured development in the village." Councillor Anne Brown said, "I feel quite cross that we are even discussing it now. What was the point of all that work? We don't need any more houses." Resident Rob Pickett said, "I'm very concerned about this rather clever proposal by Welbeck, the developer. I think it's a very dangerous precedent to let them build on that site." Frank Glasspool of Spring Lane said, "I'm relatively new to the village, but I would fully support the parish council sticking to the views that the public wanted." Welbeck's strategic planning manager, Charlotte Robinson, said in a statement, "Coldon Common is a location which Winchester City Council has identified for growth to meet its housing needs, and the submission of our application for parklands is the culmination of 2 years' detailed master planning and community consultation."
And now we have an inspirational speech. Perrin School welcomed businessman David Picton as part of the Speakers for Schools programme. He met students and gave a speech on his career and how the choices he made at school helped determine his life. Mr. Picton, who is the Chief Sustainability Officer at Carillion PLC, gave a stimulating talk to Year 8 students entitled "What I Wish I'd Known When I Was at School." He explained to the children how his academic studies have been transferred to the workplace and how this helped shape his career. Afterwards, Perrin's students had the opportunity to question him and get more first-hand insight into how best to structure their education for the business world today. The event was organised by Speakers for Schools, an independent UK charity that provides state secondary schools and colleges with talks from a range of industry's leading professionals and academics free of charge. Perrin's was the first such speech for Mr. Picton, who lives in Testbourne and is married with two teenage daughters. Science teacher Paula Kennedy said, "David's speech today was truly inspirational for the students. Some of the children were also able to speak one-to-one and had some really interesting questions to put to him. I think Speakers for Schools is a fantastic idea, bringing a different dimension to state education and one that is generally not possible for teachers to replicate." And there is a photograph of David Picton with a group of pupils from Perrin's school looking all very happy and suitably inspired by his chat to them.
And now a short item for music lovers. Cathedral's Fest at the Guildhall. Winchester is hosting this year's Southern Cathedrals Festival later this month. The cathedral choirs of Salisbury and Chichester will join those of Winchester to stage a string of concerts. Further details can be found online at southerncathedralsfestival.org.uk. That's southerncathedralsfestival, all one word, .org.uk. This year the theme is In War and Peace, to mark the centenary of the start of World War I. The event takes place at Winchester Guildhall on Saturday, July the 19th. Tickets for the whole festival, costing £10, are on sale from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's £10, and the number is 01962 857 275. They can be bought online as well.
This is quite inspiring too. There's a picture, first of all, of a row of cyclists, all smart in their T-shirts and helmets with their bicycles. Behind them is a building marked Land's End, and the fundraising cyclists at the beginning of their journey. Cyclists from a village near Winchester have been raising money for much-needed equipment at Southampton General Hospital. More than 21 full-time and part-time Twyford riders took part in an epic journey from Land's End to John O'Groats as part of the Percy's Pals fundraising appeal. The group aims to raise £250,000 to buy a portable CT scanner in memory of local resident Richard Percival, a doctor from Hedge End, who died of a stroke in 2013, aged 47. More than £95,000 has been raised for the cause since it began last year. The group took part in the 985-mile journey last month and have raised around £65,000 so far. Tim Smith, rider and challenge co-organiser, said, "Le Jog," that's the initials of Land's End John O'Groats, "is our biggest fundraising event so far. It was the chance of a lifetime to do this bucket list item and raise money for a fantastic cause at the same time." During the 11-day journey, the cyclists climbed approximately 15,000 metres, almost twice the height of Mount Everest. It is hoped the new scanner, which will be used at the Wessex Neurological Intensive Treatment Unit, will be able to detect early signs of strokes and other neurological conditions.
And now a breathless Lindsay says yes after big race. When Lindsay Kynaston finished the 10K Southampton Race for Life, she was understandably a little flushed. But that didn't stop boyfriend Matt Hurricks taking what was left of her breath away as he got down on one knee at the finish line last Sunday to propose to her. Fortunately, after waiting 2 minutes for an answer from his stunned girlfriend, she finally said yes. The pair, who live in Chandler's Ford, have been together for 18 months, having met at work at Tech Data in Basingstoke. It was a meaningful day for Lindsay and her family after her mum, Jan, was diagnosed with lung cancer 7 weeks ago. Lindsay, 24, and her sister, Lee, decided to take part in her honour, and Matt knew this would be the perfect time to pop the question. The 32-year-old said, "I always wanted to do it this year, and Race for Life was the perfect place and time." Lindsay added, "I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I didn't know what to say, but this is one of the happiest days of my life." Elsewhere, an army of female fundraisers converged on Southampton Common to help win the battle against cancer. Most of those who took part in the annual event were honouring friends and relatives who had succumbed to the disease. Others either had cancer themselves or were celebrating the fact that they or someone they knew had won their battle for life. More than 6,000 people took part, which is expected to raise about £400,000 for Cancer Research UK. And there's a lovely, happy photograph of Matt Hurricks, who has scooped an exhausted Lindsay Kynaston into his arms after she crossed the finishing line in a preparation for scooping her over the threshold.
Designer recognised. A Winchester student has received recognition for his design works at a specialist awards ceremony, and there's a photograph of a rather bashful-looking Ben Knott receiving his award. Peter Simmons College student Ben Knott was presented the award for Best Overall Design at the inaugural Southampton Solent University Design Award competition. He was joined by fellow students Ben Healy, former King's pupil Casper Tatum, and Josh Holden Brown, formerly from Swanmore College of Technology. The competition, held at the end of last month, saw the four Simmons students battle it out against pupils from across Hampshire, including Barton Peveril College student Emily Braybrook. She was presented with the award for Most Creative Design. Malcolm Cross, head of product design at Peter Simmons, said, "This year each of the participating colleges had four students competing, but in the future we hope it will include many more students from a wider range of establishments. The intention is for this to be the first of many such events run in partnership between Southampton Solent University and the Wessex Group of Colleges.
Here's a charming story. Sweet treats at school's triple celebration. There was cause for triple celebrations at a Winchester special school as they opened new facilities. Osborne School in Andover Road launched its new cafe to aid vocational learning for its 138 pupils. With the help of pupil Max Andrew, 12, it has been named CLAF, a class in a cafe. And with the help of artist Michelle Boulle-Nielsen, the pupils also put together a mural. The launch coincided with Sports Day and the opening of a new classroom following fundraising by Friends of Osborne School. Head teacher Sonia O'Donnell said it was the perfect time for a triple celebration. It was an ideal opportunity to focus on what we do here, she said. And there's a lovely picture of a row of pupils in their T-shirt uniforms in front of a table laden down with lovely baking cakes and buns and, oh, delicious.
And now we have Man Fights Council Over Barn Decision, row over conversion to go to High Court. A Sutton Scotney man who converted the first floor of a barn at his trout farm for his son to live in is heading for a High Court confrontation with planners. Nigel Jackson was refused permission to convert the property by Winchester City Council, saying he couldn't use the barn for residential use. But Mr. Jackson has won the right to have his day in court to challenge the council's order in an important planning law test case. Since the council took the stance, Mr. Jackson has already appealed to a government planning inspector, but he backed the council. However, one of the country's leading judges, Mrs. Justice Patterson, has granted Mr. Jackson permission to appeal against the inspector's decision to uphold the council's reinforcement notice. The barn at Sutton Springs in Bullington Lane is a trout farm where leisure fishing takes place. The judge held that Mr. Jackson has an arguable case that due to recent changes in the law, the inspector was no longer allowed to apply the legal principles he did in deciding the matter. Mr. Jackson had argued that the barn had been used in part for residential accommodation for more than 4 years, and so had become immune from planning control. However, the inspector held that he had deliberately concealed the residential use being made of the barn. He ruled that in those circumstances, the principle that a person should not profit from their wrongdoing should apply, and that this negated the immunity claimed by Mr. Jackson. The inspector found that positive deception took place with the aim of deceiving the council, and that Mr. Jackson had succeeded in undermining the planning process. In his decision, he said, "On any coherent reading of the evidence, his actions amounted to a strategy of deception aimed at giving the council's officers assurances that there was no intention to use the barn for residential purposes with the aim of putting them off the scent so that his son could continue to live in the barn undetected. But if Mr. Jackson is ultimately successful at the full High Court hearing, his case will have to be reconsidered without the principle being applied, which will likely lead to the enforcement appeal being successful."
Teen supports campaign for defibrillators. Teen supports campaign for defibrillators. There's a picture of Mike and Linda Mangoro with their son, Sam, and also the Saints keeper, Arthur Borrock. Months ago, he was in a hospital bed after his life was saved by a defibrillator. Now, Hampshire teenager Sam Mangoro is presenting the vital equipment to an Eastleigh school to make sure they can help others in his situation in the future. Sam, who's 16, collapsed during a PE lesson at Mountbatten School in Romsey and was saved after quick-thinking staff shocked him with a defibrillator 4 times. Since then, there have been calls on all Hampshire schools to provide the vital equipment on site through a Save a Life in Schools campaign with support from Sam and his family. And now Sam has made that happen for Crestwood College in Eastleigh, where he will present the school with a defibrillator at a ceremony today. Sam, who attended the school for a term 2 years ago, raised the money for the defibrillator through an online appeal with hundreds of pounds donated to the cause. But that money can now be used to help another school. after South Central Ambulance Service decided to cover the cost of the £700 defibrillator. Mum Linda said, "We have had very generous contributions from friends and family and followers of our website. We chose Crestwood because when we first moved to the area, we had difficulty getting Sam into a school in Romsey, but he did get a place at Crestwood, where he went for a term. We're working alongside South Central Ambulance Service to contact schools and raise awareness about defibrillators. They were very knowledgeable about which schools have them and mentioned Crestwood. We thought it would be nice if there was a family connection for the first school we could give a defibrillator to." And Sam added that he had fond memories of Crestwood and was looking forward to returning this evening. And since his heart attack, Sam has had an internal defibrillator fitted to regulate his heartbeat.
Here we go again. Highways dispute delays Barton Farm. Work on Winchester's largest housing development for 30 years could be delayed due to a highways dispute. Winchester City and Hampshire County councillors met for an update on the progress of Barton Farm, which will see 2,000 new homes built to the north of Winchester. The first phase, known as 1A and 1B, consists of 423 homes, which Carla Homes, the developer, has been given the go-ahead to start. It hopes work will start on 1B on the north of the site before Christmas, with the first properties up for sale in summer 2015, and 1A to the south later next year. However, work could be delayed over safety concerns with the road layout, maintenance and speed limit reduction to 20 miles an hour. Robert Westwood, Carla's project director, said, "We still await any communication from Hampshire Highways. It's a personal risk for us getting started without those things being agreed on." He added, "We'll be meeting with Hampshire Highways to thrash it out and say, actually, no, this is what we're proposing. Hear their views and then hopefully come to a conclusion." As part of the planning consent, which was granted in 2012, it was agreed that a diversion would be created at Andover Road North at the junction with Harestock Wellhouse Lane, that Stony Lane would be extended eastwards to form a new junction with New Andover Road, and the creation of a pedestrian and cycling routes along Andover Road. It will form a new Andover Road on an alignment to the east of the current route and reconnection with Andover Road to the north of Park Road, form new access from New Andover Road for homes on Andover Road North, and improvements to existing public rights of way. The whole development is expected to take up to 10 years and will include a new primary school, office space and 60-bed nursing home, and District Energy Centre.
The now stunning home shortlisted for National Award. A new Winchester house has been shortlisted for a National Award. Four Views is built into the hillside off Oliver's Battery Road North, with stunning views over the city. Designed by Andy Ramus of Southgate Street-based AR Design Studio, it has been shortlisted for the Sunday Times British Homes Awards. The conceptual drive behind this house was the principle of the three N's, nature, natural light and natural air. The form of the replacement house is defined by four interlocking boxes. The enclosed space at their centre forms a Zen garden with a single olive tree at its heart. AR Design Studio specialises in elegant and imaginative contemporary new homes, extensions, renovations and multi-plot developments. It has won a number of awards, such as the Royal Institute of British Architects 2012 Downland Prize, Civic Trust Award, Best of Howes Award, Federation of Master Builders Award and Daily Telegraph Small House of the Year Award. And there are several photographs of Four Views, showing the four blocks that are joined together with enormous sliding windows full of light and gazing out over views into the far distance over Winchester.
Festival set to brighten up Abbey House. Historic Abbey House, the official residence of the Mayor of Winchester, will be given an extra splash of colour at the end of the month. Otterbourne Flower and Gardening Club is mounting a fundraising flower festival between July the 25th to the 27th in aid of the Mayor's charities. The Mayor, Eileen Berry, joined the Otterbourne Club 12 years ago and recently invited the flower arranging enthusiasts to stage the first major fundraising event of her charity year. It's a photograph of the mayor, and it includes Laurie Morris, a member of the Blue Apple Theatre, who helped at the opening. The Blue Apple Theatre is one of her four chosen charities. The mayor said, "This will be a beautiful event, and we couldn't have picked anybody better to assist us than the Otterbourne Flower and Gardening Club." The Blue Apple Theatre, as you know, is one of her four charities, and the others are military charity, the Soldiers, Sailors and Air Force Association, Together Working for Mental Wellbeing, and the Winchester Scouts. Flower Cup committee member Carol Bailey said, "Members have already planned their exhibits, placed their flower orders, mocked up their design, and they'll finally arrange it on the setup day. So, on the final weekend of July, doors will be open between 10 and 5. Admission is £5, £4 for concessions, and tea and homemade cakes will also be available to raise funds for those four charities for the mayor."
Technician wins national award. Perrin School science technician Jude Runnels has recently won a national award. Jude has worked at Perrins for 7 years and will attend an award ceremony in London next term to collect a Salters CLIAPS National Award for Science Technicians, recognising her work. The aim of the awards is to acknowledge publicly the immense contribution that science technicians make to the well-being and success of schools and colleges, and in particular to science departments. Head teacher Janice Bernard said, "We have long known that Jude is an exceptional person and are thrilled that this has now been recognised at national level."
Now, decision due on Cheslow car park. Winchester Housing bosses were to confirm yesterday, Wednesday, that they want to build on a city centre car park. The Cheslow Street open air car park has been pinpointed as the site for a housing scheme for the elderly. The City Council says there is a growing need for such accommodation, with a 25% increase in the number of people aged over 85 since 2001. But residents and businesses in Cheslow Street say the car park is one of the most popular in the city. The Council argues that there is spare capacity in the nearby Cheslow multi-storey car park.
Nigel's in the saddle in memory of Leslie. And there's a picture of a chap on a bicycle, wearing his helmet, with both hands raised. And there's another photograph of him with his wife, a smiling photograph of the two of them. Nigel Gilbert is raising money for breast cancer care. His wife, Leslie, pictured left with him, died from the disease. A Winchester man is set to ride 100 miles for charity in memory of his late wife. Nigel Gilbert is to take part in the London Surrey 100, a bike ride from the Olympic Village to Surrey and back, finishing at Buckingham Palace, for breast cancer care after losing his wife Leslie to the disease 5 years ago. The couple were together for 22 years and had two daughters, Alicia, aged 20, and Cherise, 23, before breast cancer claimed the life of the former Parchment Street hairdresser in August 2009 after a 10-year battle. Mrs. Gilbert owned Rembrandt Hair Design before giving it up to undergo chemotherapy. And now Mr. Gilbert, a mechanic, hopes to raise £2,000 for the charity. Though Leslie wasn't helped by breast cancer care, Mr. Gilbert says he's amazed at the work it does, and says had he not had a big family around, he's not sure how he would have coped. "We found breast cancer care after she died," he said. "We didn't deal with them while she was ill, but I've spoken to a lot of people who've been helped by them. I couldn't imagine what would have happened if we were on our own. Leslie gave the shop up and she was diagnosed. She wouldn't have been able to keep up with the therapy she was going through. She did quite well and did all the things she would normally do. We went on holiday and things like that. Unfortunately, her friend also got it and died a year later. We were all really close, and to lose them both within a year was difficult. Now Mr. Gilbert hopes to raise as much as he can by cycling the seven-hour race in August." He said, "So far I've raised about £1,400. I'm hoping we'll top the £2,000 mark by the time we do the ride." And there's a website about donating to his cause, which is justgiving.com/Nigel-Gilbert1/.
Life's a Cabaret for actress Imogen. A young actress made a song and dance so that she can continue her education. Hampshire teen Imogen Johnson came one step closer to her dream of becoming an actress when she was offered a place at a drama school earlier this year. But before she can go, she needs to find the £15,000 to cover tuition fees and accommodation because there's no government funding available for drama courses. So she organised a cabaret show at her former college to help her find the cash and continue working towards a career on the stage. The 19-year-old from Lakeside Eastleigh hopes to start the year-long foundation course in musical theatre at Guildford School of Acting this summer. After completing the course, she will be able to audition for a 3-year degree course at a drama school. Imogen organised the show at Barton Peveril College in Eastleigh this week, where she completed her A-levels last year. She enlisted the help of past and present members of Chandler's Ford's amateur dramatics group Centre Stage Productions Youth Theatre, where she has performed for 6 years, including playing Nancy in its production of Oliver in February. The cast of 16 performed hits from top musicals including Les Miserables, Rent, The Book of Mormon and Guys and Dolls. Imogen, a waitress at the Hutt Beef Eater in Chandler's Ford, said, "I auditioned to every school that did musical theatre, and Guildford was my favourite, and it's not far from home either, which is nice." And there's a lovely picture of Imogen with the cast, a big bunch of very attractive, smiling young people.
And revving up for end-of-year bashes. It's that time of the year again when teenagers across Winchester and Hampshire don their posh frocks and bow ties and step out in their best bib and tucker for their school prom. From classic cars, double-decker buses and even the odd horse, youngsters have been arriving at their annual end-of-school bash in style. Hampshire Chronicle photographers have been capturing the magic of the proms from our local schools. And the photograph that's enclosed here is of Ben Reed from King's School, all smart in his black suit with black shirt and purple bow tie and sunglasses, kneeling in front of the classic car with a cluster of 7 gorgeous girls in their long school prom gowns gathered around him.
Army Cadets' Big Push for Heroes charity. And there's a photograph of members of 4 Troop Bishop's Waltham Army Cadet Force being put through their paces. 3 of them are lying on their stomachs doing something or other and smiling for the camera. And then there's a whole cluster of other people behind them and somebody clutching a big check. Bishop's Waltham Army Cadets have pressed hard to raise more than £600 for Help for Heroes. Members of 4 Troop Bishop's Waltham Army Cadet Force presented a cheque to the charity for £634.23. It was raised by doing the penny push-up challenge. That must be what they were doing, all lying on their stomachs. Up to 20 cadets aged 12 to 18 took turns to do as many press-ups as possible in 1 hour, totalling 2,837. The cadets then went to their sponsors and received a penny for every push-up they managed to do. 4 Troop, a detachment in Y Company, a part of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Army Cadet Force. They meet twice a week in Bishop's Waltham, where they learn military-themed skills such as first aid, navigation, fieldcraft, drill, target shooting and much more. And 4 Troop is currently recruiting.
Here's a good idea. Councillors should be cut back to 45. The number of Winchester City Councillors should be cut from 57 to 45, a meeting of the Cabinet heard. A report said there should be 45 members, down 12, the biggest revamp in decades. It follows a decision in April to retain the 3-member wards and the electoral cycle of thirds. The Local Government Boundary Commission is beginning its review next month. With fewer councillors, the size of wards is set to increase, although exactly how is currently unclear. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance, said, "Hopefully the changes will be more efficient and better for Winchester. It will require the role of councillor to change, the same amount of work but with fewer councillors. 12 fewer councillors would save about £75,000 a year," a report said. The full meeting next Wednesday, July 16th, will make the decision. There'll be elections in 2015, an all-out election in 2016, county council elections in 2017, and elections by thirds. The councillors elected with the lowest votes in 2016 will come up for re-election first. The commissions will consult from August the 26th to November the 3rd, with draft recommendations produced for early February 2015. Councillor Angela Clear for the Liberal Democrats said her group believed the number should be 48, not 45. If wards become bigger with fewer councillors, that could result in poorer representation.
And more women in the boardroom. Winchester has more female business directors than ever before. Between January and March this year, 32% of the city's directors were women, putting Winchester ahead of the UK average of 26% during that period. According to the research by business website Duport.co.uk, the number rose by 8% from the beginning of 2013. The study also found a 5% rise in new companies and that there were 18% fewer business closures.
And I'm afraid that that concludes the extract for the week ending the 11th of July 2014. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation team. And thanks to our readers. Thanks to Ellen Gray.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.